welcome to episode 183 of the Cricket Her Weekly. As you can see, we are here at Northampton for the last day of the season. It's the big one. It's the final of the Rachel Hayhoe Flint Trophy, Southern Vipers v the Blaze. It's a repeat of the final that we had earlier in the season for the Charlotte Edwards Cup, and we are both very excited. Now, it's currently before the final, so what we're going to do is record half of the podcast now, and we're going to reflect a little bit on the season. And then, once the final's done, we're hopefully going to record the next half, once we know who the winner is, Sid. So that's going to be interesting. So I would start by asking you who you think's going to win, but I think that we all know the answer to that one, don't we?
I think it's going to be Vipers again, yeah. I mean, I just think that there's just too much class and too much experience in that side. And I'm a little bit concerned that Blaze are going to fold again, kind of like the way they did in the Charlotte Edwards final. I think that for Blaze, almost a win will be not folding like that. But, you know, it's just one game. Anything can happen on the day. We'll see.
We will. And by the end of the broadcast episode, we will know, and you will know as well. So let's talk about the season, Sid, because it's been a long one. I think our first day of live cricket this season was actually 1st of May at Wormsley, and it was Vipers v the Sparks, which was a great day at a beautiful ground. So in between then, we've had all manner of things happening. Have you got any highlights? Maybe we'll start with our highlights from the domestic season.
Well, for me, it's got to be the right at the end was the highlight for me, was the Sunrisers kind of coming back and winning those four games on the trot. You know, a sort of an unprecedented run of form. It's almost a Vipers-like run of form for them. And I was just so impressed with the way that, you know, the management and the senior players and Grace Scrivens in particular turned things around. And, you know, that's the thing that I will always remember about this season. I've got to write a piece for Wisden. It's going to go in the big yellow cricket Bible. And I think that's going to be a big part of it.
Great, okay. For me, in terms of domestic highlights, and if you were tuning in to the commentary that we did at Edgbaston last weekend, then you might have already heard me wax lyrical about this, because we did talk a little bit with Claire Jenkins about season highlights. But it was great to see Paige Schofield hitting that century right back at the start of the season in her first match for the Stars, having moved teams over the summer. Over the winter, and actually to see her hitting her first century in 10 years in senior cricket, and then she hit another one in the next game. So, you know, hundreds, sometimes they're like buses, so you wait 10 years and then two come along at once. Hopefully nobody's ever waited 10 years for a bus. Anyway, that was my domestic highlight. It was just very pleasing to see somebody who has been kind of at the top levels of the domestic game for a long time really back to her best and back to succeeding. Now, internationals, Sid, because we've had the Ashes, we've had England v Sri Lanka, we've had England hammering Sri Lanka, we've had Sri Lanka hammering England. Have you got any highlights from the internationals this year?
Oh, looking back, it has to be England playing at Lord's for me. You know, that game where they beat Australia in the T20, you know, Alice Capsey starred. It was just like, it was like the high point, the apotheosis of John Ball, where everything just came together, and watching England was fun again. It was so much fun. I really enjoyed that. You know, we had some lows later in the season, but let's not talk about them. Let's remember the positives of Lords.
Yeah, and that Danny Gibson reverse sweep for four, the last ball to seal the win.
Again, so John Ball.
Absolutely. Are you going to ask me what my highlight was?
Yeah, what was your highlight, Raf?
I think for me there can only be one. I don't know if it counts as a moment, because it actually lasted for 5 days. Well, four and a bit days. It was, of course, the Ashes Test at Trent Bridge. Does anything beat Test cricket? I love it. I love reporting on it. I love the fact that you have those narratives that go over sessions, that go over days. I love the momentum. And, you know, maybe if we had more Tests, then they would feel less special. But as it is, we still only have a maximum of one a year, or one a domestic summer. And they are so exciting to be at and to report on, and I just love them. And this one was particularly special because, of course, it was the first ever 5 day one that we've reported on, the first 5 day one that there's been in many a year, and the first 5 day one that's ever been in England. So yeah, exciting all round. And of course, you know, know, we didn't perhaps get the result that England fans would have liked to see, but I do feel that actually England had a real shot at that test, and it was a genuinely competitive test, and it swung back and forth, and really it was only obvious that Australia were going to come out on top with that, probably that last session, the way that England batted on the fourth day, and then of course totally folded within an hour and a half on the fifth day. So obviously Australia came out on top in the end, but we got a result, and that's always good for a women's test, of course, because as we know, that hasn't happened very often recently. So for all of those reasons and many more, the test was wonderful. I haven't even mentioned Tammy Beaumont's double 100. And
is she behind me?
She's somewhere out there. Okay, so those were our highlights, Sid. Let's return to more recent events, because this week we have had the Rachel Hayhoe-Flint Trophy Eliminator on Thursday at Beckenham. It was the Stars v the Blaze, and as we talked about in last week's episode, even though the Blaze had finished second, they ceded their home advantage to the Stars because Beckenham was the ground that was available for the teams to play at. Did home advantage do the Stars any good? No, it did not.
No, it didn't really, did it? I guess that you could see from the actual pitch at Beckenham was not a good pitch. It was a very end of season pitch. It was a very, oh my God, we need to make another pitch here. what can we do? And honestly, it looked like some kids had run up and down on it in the muddy weather or something.
That's so harsh.
it wasn't good. And what we understand happened is that Bryony Smith looked at the pitch and went, oh my God, we better bet on this first because it's only going to get worse. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, with rain around, some people were saying that they should have looked at DLS, and DLS can be easier when you know what you're chasing in that second innings. The other side of that coin, though, is that with DLS, especially when you get the full first innings and then a curtailed second innings, you want to have to get quite a run rate. So actually, the overall run rate that the Stars went at was under 3. In order to win that game, the Blaze,
target for the Blaze was 37 or 40 balls when they came back out.
Yeah, so it was a 5-and-over target. So they had to actually go considerably faster than you know, they bowled Stars out for. So it was a challenge, you know. But the fact is that they got there reasonably easily, and you know, Sarah Bryce batted brilliantly.
I actually disagreed with you about that DLS target, because my instant reaction when I saw it was, wow, that's so much easier to hit 37 or 40 balls than to actually have to bat for a longer period, as the Stars did, on a very difficult pitch. Blaze had 9 wickets in hand, they were going to win that 99 times out of 100, I think. So I think that the DLS and the rain shortened match actually made it look much worse for the Stars than it actually would have been had Blaze actually had to bat for a bit longer on that dodgy pitch. That's my view. Now, the other thing that has been kind of talked about a bit, Sid, is obviously we still at the moment in the Rachel Hayhoe-Flint Trophy only have that second, third place playoff, the Eliminator. Semi-finals are a potential thing that is now being talked about. There was actually a comment from Jack Rule on Twitter a couple of weeks ago saying he thinks that it's time for semi-finals in the Rachel Hayhoe-Flint.
And who should reply to Jack Rule's tweet but Beth Barrett-Wild, who is head of all things women's cricket at the ECB these days, and she said, watch this space for next year. So I think that we can kind of take that as pretty much read that there's going to be 2 semi-finals next year. How do you feel about that, Raf? Because it's like one thing that you are removing by doing that, unless you go to some other like bizarre system like the one they're using for WBBL, you're removing the advantage of finishing first. How does it make you feel?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, I think personally that the way that they started off with the Rachel Hayhoe-Flint Trophy, it made sense to just have the second, third place eliminator because we didn't have very many games initially. If you remember, in that first year of the competition, it was COVID and we had to play literally every single match except the first round. I think it was the August bank holiday, but it was basically a September competition. This season, obviously what the ECB have decided to do is bump up the number of matches vastly. So we've now got a situation where actually it feels like it probably is about right to introduce semi-finals, because we've got that length of competition now where it makes sense, and where actually you are starting to feel a little bit shortchanged if you are the fourth place team and you just miss out. In this case...
That could have been Sunrisers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know. I was just going to say that. How amazing would that have been actually to have Sunrisers after the season and the previous seasons they've had be in a semi-final? Well, anyway, maybe, as you say, it's likely that we'll see semi-finals next year. Don't know whether Sunrisers will be there or not. In terms of the WBBL thing, I just find it such a confusing system. We actually looked it up in the car on the way here because I couldn't remember how it worked, and you had a vague idea and you were actually right. So fourth place third, and then the winner of that plays second, and then the winner of that plays the finalist. I think I've explained that correctly. But actually it's a very bizarre system, and I remember when it was announced really struggling to get my head around it, and they've got these different names for it.
I believe it's the Eliminator, the Annihilator and the Terminator, Raf.
I think you've done that joke before, Sid. Anyway, so from my perspective, obviously there's a thing that, there is this idea that you know, there's more sporting integrity if you have an advantage finishing first and if you have a disadvantage finishing fourth. I kind of get that, but from a fan perspective, it's very confusing, and I think that the disadvantage that you get from a fan perspective outweighs any benefit that you get in terms of kind of increased sporting integrity. Because I think that still with women's cricket, we're in a situation where we still have a very relatively small fan base, and we want to try and build that up. We need to therefore make the sport as easy to follow as possible. So that's my view.
Yeah, keep it simple, stupid.
Did you just call our viewers stupid?
Absolutely not.
Okay, well, that's everything that we had to say on the Rachel Hayhoe Flint so far. Sid, there has been some other news this week, global news, from the ICC in relation to the forthcoming Men's World Cup. Did you know the men are about to play a 50-over World Cup?
Oh my gosh, who knew, Raf? Who knew men played cricket?
I know, it's a funny old world, isn't it, men playing cricket? Anyway, so the ICC, a couple of days ago, have announced that the prize pot for this World Cup, this Men's World Cup, because it is the Men's World Cup, is going to be $10 million. The winners will take home $4 million, and the runners-up will take home $2 million. Now, what did you make of that prize money announcement, Sid?
Well, it's an interesting one, because the most interesting part of it for me, obviously, is what are the implications for the women's game. Now, we know that some months ago, the ICC made a big announcement about prize money parity in their ICC tournaments, and that the prize money was going to be equalised across the men's and the women's games. So what would this actually mean in practice for the players? Well, if we go back to 2017, the England players that won that World Cup took home about £30,000 each. It's about 60,000 Australian or US dollars, very roughly. This prize money, if you kind of extrapolate that out, a bit back of an envelope calculation, this prize money would mean each player, rather than £30,000, would take home £250,000, $500,000. That's an absolutely extraordinary increase. Now, the question is, this announcement was actually quite specific, though, that this is for the Men's World Cup. So, Raf, what's going on here?
Well, Sid, I did a little bit of digging into the ICC's parity prize money announcement, which was actually only made on 13th of July, so it's relatively recent. And I think at the time we probably even said, either on Twitter or X or whatever the hell I meant to call it, and possibly on the broadcast, that it was a very welcome announcement, that equalising prize money. I think at the time I may have missed the catch in the announcement that was made, because I went back and I read it earlier today. Now, here's what it says. Teams will now receive equal prize money for finishing in similar positions at comparable events. And the overall headline was, the ICC today announced equal prize money for men's and women's teams at ICC events. Now, I don't know whether I'm reading too much between the lines here, but it feels to me like possibly that announcement about prize money, that press release, was worded very carefully, and that what's actually going on is that they've said that the team prize pot will be the same, but what the individual players take home on the winning team will not be.
Well, we shall see. We'll be watching carefully to see what actually happens and to see what the ICC actually announce when they announce the prize pot for the next Women's World Cup.
I mean, it's very interesting, isn't it? Because we didn't, neither of us spotted that caveat at the time. So if that is indeed what's going on here, then somebody at the ICC has been very clever about this. So yeah, as you say, we'll have to wait and see. We have got a 50 over World Cup in India. Our next one is in India as well, in 2025. We're hoping to be there, all things being well. And we shall see what the prize money is. We shall revisit this conversation. Anyway, for now, we are going to go and watch Vipers v the Blaze. Hopefully it stays dry. And we will resume the broadcast once the match has concluded. Well, we're back. The final's played out. And you might be able to hear some celebratory music going on in the background. Sid's got a smile on his face because once again, Southern Vipers have triumphed. They've beaten the Blaze by 5 wickets. And Sid, as you've just written in your report, it was relatively easy in the end.
Yeah, it was. There was certainly a moment, wasn't there, when you know certain journalists for certain major newspapers were writing a report suggesting that the Blaze were going to win. And you know, Josie Groves got those 3 wickets, you know, in quick succession, and a lovely ball to bowl George Adams. I just don't know how it kind of fluttered past her, but somehow it did. And you know, I really thought at that point that it was still like nearly 100 runs needed, and I was like, I don't think the Vipers are going to do this. I think this is going to be the moment that the juggernaut comes to a crunching halt. But it did not, did it, Raf?
No, absolutely, it did not. And a couple of really important innings played after that Josie Groves intervention. Obviously, Emily Windsor scoring a half century at a pretty nifty rate and finishing unbeaten. And of course, Freya Kemp at the other end playing a slightly less speedy innings, but a really important one. And I thought it was very interesting something that Charlotte Edwards has just said in the post-match interview with myself and a few other journalists. She said, that's my highlight of the season, watching Freya Kemp bat like that. And she also said that when Freya Kemp is bowling again, I think she's going to be one of the best all-rounders in the world. Now, maybe, you know, slight hyperbole there from her head coach, who's obviously mentored her over the last couple of years and really sees her as a very exciting prospect. But it's interesting that that Lottie herself chose to kind of highlight the importance of that innings post-match.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, in fact, you know, sitting there in the press box, you know, as Freya Kemp walked out to bat, I was just like, she's going to play a silly shot and get out, and that's going to be the end of it. There's not a lot of batting to come. There was Lindsay Smith still to come, but you know, there was still an awful lot of work to do. And there was no silly shot. She played really sensibly. She went at less than a runner ball, but she let Emily Windsor kind of, you know, be in the driving seat. And full credit to her. So I think Lottie's right. I mean, who'd have thought it?
Yeah. And I have obviously just done a very fangirly tweet about Charlotte Edwards herself, saying that she's basically the best thing to happen to women's cricket in about 50 years. I just think she's brilliant. She's so modest. I've just literally said to her, I asked her, you know, how are you so successful as a head coach with all of the teams you coach? And she just said, I managed to coach brilliant players and I have great staff around me. And that's Lottie all over. She's not in it for the plaudits, but she's really, really bloody good at what she does. And I just think that we can't sing her praises enough, and that if a man was doing what she did, he would be the best paid coach in the world, and she's probably not even in the top 20. Now, of course, she's not in it for the money, but she's just so successful, and she just keeps on going. And Emily Windsor has just said, you know, the reason that we go out there and we play like we do and we dig deep as a team is because she inspires loyalty in us and we want to do it for her. And yeah, I just think she's brilliant.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. perhaps a little bit of a word about the Blaze though, because you know it's a hard day for them. You know, they've now lost both domestic finals. Poor old Marie Kelly has lost all 3 domestic finals. You know, and those players must be heartbroken, Raf.
Yeah, it's really tough for them. And I remember actually interviewing Captain Kirsty Gordon after they lost the Charlotte Edwards Cup final earlier in the year to the Vipers. And she just said, oh, well, it's our first ever time in a final and we'll learn from this. And yet again, it just feels like they've been outgunned by a team who have more experience in 50 over final this time. And that's not something to be sniffed at, is it? That kind of experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I've just written in my piece, that you know, what we do in cricket is we make, you know, that the final is the key to it, right? You have to win that final in order to lift the trophy. It's not like football where, you know, you go through a league process and if you lose your last game, it might not matter because if you've won enough games previously, you'll still win them. And, you know, it's about being able to play in that moment when the pressure's really on. There was an enormous amount of pressure on Emily Windsor today to absolutely definitely, because there was still a long way to go, but she handled it brilliantly. She scored it more than a runner ball, and the only mystery to me was that she wasn't player of the match. Raph, were you a bit surprised by the player of the match?
Yeah, I was, to be honest. It was given to Lindsay Smith, who obviously did pick up three wickets. The first two of those were absolutely crucial. They really put the blaze on the back foot very early on, within, you know, the first couple of overs, actually. But I did think that Emily Windsor had played the particularly kind of significant hand. It's a weird one because I do think that sometimes there is pressure on the people who are making those decisions to decide on the player of the match before the match ends. And we know that, having been in the situation where written press have to actually highlight a player of the series often before the match ends. And sometimes it's really not clear, you know, which side to come down on. So I wonder whether that perhaps happened today, because it does seem a little bit of a strange decision in many ways. But, you know, obviously, congratulations to both Lindsay Smith and Emily Windsor, who were both very important. And I think, as you say, we have to give congratulations to the Blaze as well. They've been in existence less than 12 months, and here we are. They've been in two domestic finals, and there will be more to come. Now, Sid, it's the end of our season. We're a bit tired. I would say normally we're you know, gearing up for a quieter winter, but I've got a load of teaching ahead on my hands, so that's going to be exciting. But anyway, we'll obviously still be bringing you the Cricket Her Weekly. Can you hear those celebrations going on? There's obviously a great big sing-song going on in the Vipers dressing room.
I heard We Are The Champions there ringing out, and you know, you've got to give it to them, they are the champions.
And also Don't Stop Me Now. And nothing can, it seems. Well, perhaps something will change next season. We'll be bringing you it all on the Cricket Her Weekly. Thanks for tuning in. See you soon. Bye.
Bye.